Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's been called our country's foundational data set, the U.S. Census. The Constitution says everyone living here must be counted every 10 years, and it's always a huge task, but the preparations for the 2020 census seem especially daunting. First, there's the controversy over the citizenship question, which may be on the form or not, depending on what the U.S. Supreme Court says later this month. Then there's the nation's workforce shortage, meaning the Census Bureau is struggling to find enough employees. Also, this is the first census to allow all U.S. households to participate in the census online. Today in The Exchange, preparing for the 2020 census in the Granite State. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We'll hear lots of voices throughout the hour, but with us for the entire hour is Ken Gallagher, Principal Planner at the State Office of Strategic Initiatives and the New Hampshire State Data Center Lead. That means he's the Census Bureau's primary point of contact to New Hampshire State Government. Ken Gallagher, welcome. Really nice to see you.
Well, thanks. I'm really happy to be online today.
Also with us from a studio in New York, Hansi Lo Wong, NPR's national correspondent who has been covering from tip to toes the 2020 census. Hansi, you're a busy guy. We really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and both of you, we will tackle the latest with the citizenship question. This story seems to change every day. But there are a lot of other factors going on with the census that are also critical to its success. So, gentlemen, let's start with the very big picture first. And Hansi, just remind us why the census is so important.
This is a requirement in the Constitution. One of the first few sentences in the Constitution calls for a headcount. It's known as an actual enumeration if you're actually looking into the Constitution's language. But it's calling for a headcount of every person living in the country. And this is important. If you think this is wonky, think this is boring, this is about power, this is about money. How many congressional seats and electoral college votes each state gets is dependent upon your state's population size. And also, these population numbers and the demographic information help guide how hundreds of billions of your federal tax dollars are distributed to local communities for schools, for roads, for other public services.
So it's about power and money. It doesn't get bigger than that, Hansi. What kind of funding are we talking about?
You know, this is funding that you think about Medicare, you think about Medicaid, and, you know, I always go back to roads, just how federal grants and programs that go to help local communities fix their roads. It's very basic level of funding, and how we determine how communities get a fair share of that funding, that's based on census data.
Well, and I've seen estimates up to $800 billion, so no state wants to be undercounted for sure. Ken Gallagher, what's your office? What's his role in the census here in New Hampshire?
Well, as the lead for the State Data Center, it's going to be up to us to work with the census and partner with them, make sure that the population in the state is aware of what the issues are with the census. So that's one reason I'm happy to be on today. We will be starting up in a couple weeks a complete count committee, which is something that people in most of the states are doing, where we're going to reach out to lots of different groups in the state, lots of towns and cities as well, and work on methods to research what the problems are in the state and how to develop a message.
Well, and I want to let everybody know, while we're talking about the census, our producer, Ali Oshinsky, did try to get someone from the Census Bureau on with us. She made multiple attempts. The Northern New England Division of the New York Region of the Census was unable to find someone to do an interview. And the media relations at the federal level of the Census said they would have to decline to do a live interview at this time. So I just want to let people know we tried to reach out to the Census and have them join us today. I'm interested in that committee, Ken. Tell us a little bit more. It sounds sort of hyper-local.
Yeah, it's just getting underway here in New Hampshire. We're having our first kickoff meeting later in June. And as I say, we're reaching out to towns and cities, community action programs, regional planning commissions, any groups that really should have a say in crafting how people can be answering the census and why it's so important. There's actually, the goal is eventually to have local complete count committees as well. And for instance, the city of Nashua has already started one. So we're very interested to see what they're doing.
Wow. So the whole state will have a complete count committee. And
right.
Then you might even have it in, Keene or Concord.
Exactly.
Or little towns and so forth. Hansi, what do you think about that? Is that happening elsewhere too? A complete count committee, not just at the state level, but the local level?
Starting to hear about that around the country, and this is, when I talk to folks who are involved in past censuses, these local outreach efforts are really critical to getting out the count, if you will. The Census Bureau is going to put out television ads, national television ads. You'll see billboards around the country starting in January. But really the key I hear from people involved in past censuses is really that local touch, to hear it from your local faith leader, local community group leader, someone that you know and trust, to tell you exactly why, a census is happening and why it's important. That's the key, based on past censuses, to getting people to participate, to fill out the form, to answer the questions.
Well, and the Census Bureau did send us a statement, by the way, talking about the money and why it's so important. I said $800 billion earlier. The Census Bureau says it's actually more than $675 billion in federal funding, and the census helps determine how that will be distributed, in addition to, as you mentioned, Hansi, how many seats your state will get in Congress, state and local officials using the results to redraw boundaries for congressional districts, state legislature, school districts, and so forth. How much do you think, Hansi, people get this funding question? I think most people understand that it helps determine political boundaries, but what about the federal funding? Do you think people understand that that is partly what's going to determine how much money they get for roads?
No, I as a Census Beat reporter, this is something that, I'm continuously bringing up, and it's news to a lot of people because it is so, I think part of it is because the census is really such a basic building block of how we set up our reality in this country, how we figure out who is living in this country. Very, very basic information, and it sets up, the reality also not just for funding, but also think about it for health research, for social science research. Businesses also use this information to determine where to open a new supermarket based on the demographics of a community. So this is very basic information that policymakers, business leaders all rely on to make informed decisions over the next decade. This is a once in a decade opportunity. There are no do-overs when we're talking about the census. So whatever the count is by the end of 2020, that's going to be the data that we'll be living with for the next 10 years.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned private businesses. Ken, can you jump in on that too? Because that's something I hadn't really thought about until I started researching for the show. How do private entities use this data?
Oh, it's a huge thing. There's all sorts of applications now that either the census is developing or third parties that are aimed at businesses. Where should be the intersection where you want to put your next shopping center or your next business or whatever? Those things are crucial. And really, with the census, the fact that it's every 10 years, this is the bedrock for all the estimates and all the surveys that go on beyond that. Any surveys that are done are based on the original numbers that are counted in the census. So this will affect anything that the businesses will be looking at.
Yeah, I read something the other day that it doesn't just determine whether, Trader Joe's opens up in Concord or wherever. It also might determine what the grocery stores put on their shelves in a particular community. I think that's fascinating.
Yeah, that would have to be, they would have to, obviously, that's not what people are counting in the census, but you can certainly merge it with big data with other types of data sets.
I see. Yeah. All right. Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We are taking a look at all the preparations for the 2020 census. And in a few minutes, we will tackle the controversy over the citizenship question, But as we're learning, there's a lot going on in terms of getting ready for the census to make sure that states and cities are not undercounted. You can join us with your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477, email exchange at nhpr.org. And Ken and Hansi, I want to bring another voice into our conversation. With us now for more on what the census might tell us about New Hampshire is Ken Johnson. He's senior demographer at the Carsey School of Public Policy at UNH. And Ken Johnson, welcome back. It's always great to have you.
Thanks very much.
How excited are you about the new census data, Ken?
Well, it's 301 days and 12 hours until the census, so not very excited at all.
So your birthday and Christmas and New Year's all wrap up into one.
Right. And so, only once a decade.
Yeah. So what is it that makes you so excited?
Well, I mean, it's the one opportunity we have in a decade to actually know how many people are actually in the United States, how they're distributed, what their racial and ethnic breakdown are. I mean, we have estimates from the Census Bureau, which are very good, but they're not the same as the census itself. And as your guests were pointing out, the census is the driving force behind essentially every statistical program in the federal and state government. I mean, the census is the basis for all of the estimates of poverty and everything else, although the census itself will not ask those kinds of questions. And that's certainly one important point, is that the census actually only asks about 10 questions. So it's not as if it's going to be burdensome for people to fill out. It will only take a few minutes. So,
well, and let's dig into it a little bit then, Ken. There's so much data out there these days, and it seems so easy to collect it. You know, who knows what kind of data our phones are collecting or Google is collecting. How much do demographers like you, Ken, still consider the census the gold standard?
It is. I mean, there's no argument.
Still.
It is the gold standard. There's no comparison to it. Even the estimates and the ACS, the American Community Survey, which the Census Bureau does all the time, they are all weighted to the decennial census. And so it is the gold standard. I mean, I don't know that it's possible to understate how important the decennial census is to the statistical system, both private and public, of the United States.
Tell us a little bit more about the American Community Survey, Ken, because that has come up a lot. What is the American Community Survey, and how is that related to the every 10 years census?
The American Community Survey is done continuously in the United States, around 3 million households a year. It asks much more detailed questions about education and poverty and jobs and method of getting to work and fertility and things like that. The census, again, only asks basic questions about age, race, sex, you know, whether your home is owned or rented. So, again, all the detail is in the ACS or in the other surveys that the Census Bureau does, like the current population survey. The census, though, is the basic numerical structure to which everything else is weighted and adjusted. So, for example, if the ACS or if a survey done by a commercial poller gets fewer, say, black males than it should, it will know that because the census will tell it how many black males there were, and it can weight its own analysis to that. I can give you some examples of how this is important in New Hampshire if you want.
Yeah, I would like to ask you that, although I'm very curious. I definitely want to ask you that, Ken, about the American Community Survey versus the U.S. Census every 10 years, because from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, Ken, you're supposed to fill out the U.S. Census. You don't have to participate in the American Community Survey. Is that right?
Well, certainly you're legally required to fill out the census, although to my knowledge, no one's ever gone to jail for not filling out the census. I think that certainly the response rate to the ACS is lower, so I honestly don't know off the top of my head if it's legally required to fill out the ACS.
And the American Community Survey does have a citizenship question, right, Ken? So some people who favor putting the citizenship question in the U.S. census, the big U.S. census, say, hey, what's the problem? You know, the community survey has a citizenship question.
Yes, I mean, there is a citizenship question on the ACS.
Did you want to talk a little bit more about how the U.S. Census, the big one, might be used to determine projects, funding, research about New Hampshire?
Right, and one point to make about New Hampshire is New Hampshire gets about $3.8 billion a year in funding based in one way or another on census results. Now, it's not possible to simply say if we miss X percent of New Hampshire's population, that we're going to lose Y percent of funding or anything like that. But it does play an important role in an enormous amount of funding that comes to the state. So it's important that we get the count right. So here's just a couple of examples of issues that are important to New Hampshire that the census data is central to. For example, when I was on your show last week, we were talking about concerns about the aging labor force in New Hampshire and where we're going to get new workers for New Hampshire. If we're going to understand what's going on with that, number one, we have to know how many workers of every age group there are and how many people there are of any every age group. That's based on the census, the decennial census itself. An important issue for New Hampshire is migration in and out of the state, especially migration by age. In other words, how many are we gaining or losing 20-somethings? What's happening with 30-year-olds? All of that data has to have the census underlying it in order for us to calculate those numbers. In fact, I was involved in the calculation of these age-specific rates for every county in the United States for the last two decades, and it's an enormous undertaking, and we have to have the decennial census data to do it. Another thing that we've talked about in New Hampshire that's a concern is fertility patterns. That is, the number of births in New Hampshire is declining, and an important question when we want to look at that is how many women of childbearing age are there? And again, the census is where those numbers come from. By the same token, we're worried about drug deaths in New Hampshire. Again, to know how many young adults are being affected by drugs and what proportion of our population that is, we need the data from the census to tell us about that. It also tells us, and this is an issue in New Hampshire as well, about different parts of the state. Some parts are growing, some parts are declining. It's really the decennial census that gives us the basic data we need to understand how the population is in New Hampshire is changing, how it's moving around, where there, it may be important to focus on senior centers, where building new schools may be more important. All of that data requires the decennial census, and it requires that it be accurate.
Well, that's really interesting. So just to clarify, Ken, you know, I understand what you're saying about if we want to track how many young people have died from overdoses and so forth. Questions about drug use are not on the census, but you can extrapolate.
Not.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, they're not. But in order to calculate the rate, for example, to say that there are four drug deaths per 1,000 young adults in the United States, you have to know how many young, or in New Hampshire, you have to know how many young adults there is. In other words, the census provides the denominator for all rates, whether it's fertility rates or drug death rates or any other kind of rate. The number of people in those groups, of those age groups or racial groups, that comes from the decennial census itself. And although the ACS is very good and very useful, it cannot provide the detail that the decennial census can provide.
ACS, again, is the American Community Survey. Last question for you, Ken Gallagher, Ken Johnson, and we can feel the excitement as a demographer. Once this data is finalized, what's the first thing you look at?
The first data that will come out from the census is by December 31st of 2020, and that's the number of people in each state so that the reapportionment of the federal Congress can go on March, I believe it's March, or maybe it's April 1st, 1 year after the census. The data that will be used to reapportion or redistrict within the state of New Hampshire and every other state will come out. Then we'll know the number of people in each place, in every county, in every city. So those are the first two big releases, and you can hear me getting excited just thinking about the fact that we'll have that data. So,
well, Ken, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Sure. Bye.
That's Ken Johnson, senior demographer at the Carsey School of Public Policy at UNH. Coming up, we will tackle that citizenship question, where it comes from, why it's now before the U.S. Supreme Court, and we'll start taking your questions and comments, 1-800-892-6477. We'll also talk about the digital aspect of this year's census. That is huge. This is the first time that all households will be allowed to participate digitally, raising lots of questions and concerns there. So all that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Support NHPR today for a chance to win two $1,000 Southwest Airline gift cards. Good for flying out to visit friends in San Jose, California, or exploring rainforests near San Jose, Costa Rica. You'll be automatically entered into this incredible drawing to choose your own adventure when you support NHPR today at nhpr.org. Good luck.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, preparations for the 2020 census. The Census Bureau has a lot to resolve before the count begins in April of next year. The nation's low unemployment rate means the Bureau is struggling to find enough workers. Also, this is the first time a majority of Americans will be allowed to participate online filling out their census forms. And then there is the big controversy over the citizenship question now before the U.S. Supreme Court. So we're talking about all this, and we're taking your questions and comments. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. With me in studio, Ken Gallagher, Principal Planner at the State Office of Strategic Initiatives. He's the Census Bureau's primary point of contact to the New Hampshire state government. Joining us from New York City, Hansi Lo Wong, NPR national correspondent. He's been covering the 2020 census. And gentlemen, before we dig into this citizenship question that has gotten so much coverage, Hansi, Kyle sent us an email. He says, around October, November, I got the census form to fill out, and it did ask if you are a U.S. citizen. Just clarify, Hansi, it sounds like that's the American Community Survey that Ken Johnson was talking about. Is that right?
It does sound like that, or it could be possibly maybe another survey, but very likely American Community Survey, because the 2020 census forms have not gone out yet. There are other surveys that the Census Bureau does put out, and the American Community Survey does include that census, the citizenship question. One thing also just to clarify, the 2020 census officially starts actually in January in rural Alaska, in the most remote villages in Alaska, but most places around the country, including in New Hampshire, will start getting mailings and being able to start participate in the census around mid-March of next year.
Okay, so I misspoke. I thought it was April. Thank you for the correction. And I'm glad you mentioned that it's getting started in extreme rural areas, because that's been a concern here in New Hampshire, too. And Ken, to you first, what are some of the challenges or concerns that you have to work on to reach the more rural areas of our state?
Well, we actually do have some tools that we use to indicate like what are drivers of response and what might prevent them. In terms of rural areas, if it's more actually related to poverty, so if there's lower incomes, they've noticed that those areas tend to be a little more difficult to respond to. Certainly with the internet filing coming on, then we do have issues of access to the internet, and in rural areas that will be an issue. So one of the things that I know the census is talking about and we're trying to talk about is having community centers in the state provide some sort of place that people can come to do it online if they wish to do that.
Like the library,
exactly.
For example.
Yeah.
Well, and let's talk about the digital aspect of this. And Hansi, I had heard earlier that this was the first digital census. Now I understand that it's not completely the case. We did a little bit digitally last time around. Can you just clarify that, Hansi, please?
Sure. Back in 2000, there was very quietly the Census Bureau had this option to allow some households to go online and participate in the census. But next year is going to be the first one to allow every household in the country to go online. And this is really a big, big step for the Census Bureau in order to allow households, anyone in a household, to just, you know, even do it on their phones. And the Census Bureau is hoping this will make it a lot more convenient for people who do have internet access. But there is concern amongst some advocacy groups, especially in rural areas, immigrant communities, folks who do not have reliable internet access, they will still be able to do it by paper. Also, they can call 1-800 numbers to participate online. Another concern about having an online census is it brings cybersecurity risks. This is the first time the Census Bureau is rolling out on such a massive scale a tool, a website, to allow folks to log on. And this is going to be happening in the middle of a very contentious presidential race. It's also going to be the first social media census. There's concerns that we could see possible interference from foreign governments or other bad actors in the Census Bureau's infrastructure and the IT systems, the website. These are all concerns the Census Bureau is very aware of, very concerned about. Census Bureau officials say they have reached out to other federal agencies as well as to social media companies to try to be more proactive of any possible disinformation campaigns, as well as to beef up its IT infrastructure. But really, it is a bit of a black box to understand exactly what's happening. And part of that is Census Bureau says they want to let us know as a public only as much as they want to keep a little bit of it quiet and under the covers to prevent any bad actors from knowing exactly how to infiltrate the systems.
Wow. And we did a show, gosh, a couple months ago, Hansi, on scams targeting especially senior citizens over the phone and online. I can just imagine the possibilities of scammers saying, yeah, I'm the U.S. Census. Give me a social security number, please.
That would be a concern, but it's one thing to know is the Census Bureau will not be asking for your social security number when you're participating in the census.
All right. Let's go to our listeners, both of you. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Our email exchange at nhpr.org. Today, we are looking at all the preparations for the 2020 census going on nationally and here in the state. Let's hear from you. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. And Jody's calling from Loudoun. Hi, Jody, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm just curious where there's going to be online access to submitting the data, if there's any risk of hackers in light of all the Russian hacking with our voting system.
Yeah.
I mean, where there's so many implications.
Jody, I had a similar question, so thank you very much. Ken, how much are you talking about this at the state level?
That's really not something that we've really addressed at this point. So I just know from personal experience, having visited the census, for instance, that at least at that end, we can be very certain that they're doing all they can. I don't know if you've ever seen their headquarters. It's kind
no.
of a fortress. They've, they're blocking all sorts of signals to get into their systems.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So in terms of a digital census on your end, Ken, the concern is more just access.
Exactly.
People in rural areas not having access to
that
the
internet.
That
is our concern. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you know about the hacking possibilities, Hansi? You talked about it a little bit before, but I'd love to hear more.
Sure. This is top of the list, really, for the Census Bureau right
now. I bet, yeah.
One of the main issues of having an online census, and it's a major concern, and they are trying to, again, really strengthen their IT infrastructure in order to prevent that from happening. It is a major concern, and, you know, we'll just have to see exactly what happens. You know, one thing to keep in mind is that if there are any specific concerns about using the online census, there still is a paper form that you can fill out. And also you could call a 1-800 number to provide your information.
So how will residents know, Hansi, that the census form that's sent to them electronically is the real deal? Again, you know, our caller asks about hacking. I'm curious about scams, given that they seem to be ever rising. How will people know that this is for real?
I think we'll have to see when the Census Bureau has not pulled out images or screenshots of what that website would look like for the actual online census form. So once that is out, we'll have some better indicators of, you know, certain things we're looking for and any kind of signifiers to make sure we're going onto the correct site. The other thing to keep in mind is that you can also, when you're logging on to the census website to fill out it online, you can enter an online code, an ID, to identify yourself. And so that would be an indicator to kind of match you up with that database system. That's one option. But this is something we'll have to watch for. Exactly how can the public make sure that any websites that are fake websites trying to collect people's information, how to distinguish it? It's hard to say right now because we don't have a clear idea of exactly what that website will look like from the Census Bureau.
Didn't they do a digital test in Rhode Island, Hansi, that might have helped them determine, you know, whether the system was ripe for hacking or scams?
There was a test. This was the only test run of the 2020 census, and it happened in Providence County, Rhode Island. And there were options to do it online. And as far as I know, I have not heard of any issues with the online option.
Yeah, I heard that it went better than expected. But then the critique, Hansi, right, is that they only did it in the Providence area, which is pretty, you know, urban or suburban. There haven't been any tests in rural areas.
That's right. The Census Bureau actually had planned to do test runs in rural areas in West Virginia, as well as in Puerto Rico, in order to get a better sense of Spanish-speaking communities, as well as in Washington State. But all those had to be scaled back because of funding uncertainty and earlier years in the preparations.
Yeah, how much financial support is the Census getting this time around? I've heard, Hanzi, that usually the Bureau gets a increased funding in the years, you know, the 2 or 3 years preceding a big census.
Right. There's a big ramp up in funding as the census continues. And, you know, we may only think about the census once every 10 years, and people may be thinking about it for the first time today. But the Census Bureau and many parts of the government are thinking about the census for over this past decade, because there are a lot of preparations. Almost as soon as the one census ends, preparations are beginning for the next one. And so the money that the Census Bureau needs increases as it gets closer. More people need to be hired to do temporary jobs. Also, the projects that are underway get scaled up to the entire country. And so right now we're watching to see exactly how much Congress is going to appropriate for this upcoming fiscal year. The Census Bureau says it currently is on budget and on time and has enough money. But in past years, it has not received as much money as it says it needs.
Well, and in terms of the workforce, we got an email from Joan who says, I'm a part-time public school teacher and my unpaid summer is approaching. I applied to work for the census at the beginning of May, but the only correspondence I received when I applied was an email saying, available, your application can be considered for employment. Joan says, I've heard nothing since. She says, as a teacher, I've been fingerprinted. I'm a citizen in good standing, wondering why they are saying they can't find people to hire when there are folks like me out there waiting for word. Joan says, what's going on? What about the hiring process, Ken, here in New Hampshire? I myself have gotten 3 postcards recently from the Census Bureau. I'm assuming they're just blanketing my neighborhood saying, come work for us.
Yeah, I don't, you know, since I'm not in the census field office here in Concord, I don't know what exactly their schedule is for rolling things out. But I do know, actually, I found the URL if anybody else is interested. It's 2020census.gov/jobs. It's a fairly simple thing to apply for. I expect that they will be hearing on their on whatever schedule that they have set up. I do know that in terms of preparing to work for the census, they've streamlined their training this year, so that instead of like a whole week of in-class training, they only have like a couple days, and then the rest of it can be done online. So I know that they're trying to make arrangements or accommodations so that it makes it easier for people to do this as a part-time job in addition to what else they might be doing.
So Ken, you and Hanzi both talked about the digital aspect of this particular census and how it's really ramped up from the last time. Given that, what will physical census workers be doing? Will they be walking around with that classic clipboard knocking on your door or not?
There's a few different things really that they're looking for the census workers to be doing. The first thing will actually be this summer, where they're going to be out there in the field checking up on the census geography, making sure that they have all the new streets in, making sure that all the addresses are correct, because that's what they do to send out all the forms to begin with. So you might see people this summer. And then the other thing that happens is what's called non-response follow-up. So if people do not get, if the census doesn't get their forms back from people electronically or by mail, people will start knocking on doors.
And that's the hard job.
That's right. This will start happening probably in May of next year.
All right. Well, when I see people roaming around my neighborhood, I will now know
yes.
What's going on. Let's go back to our listeners. Thank you for that question. And Candace is calling in from Manchester. Hi, Candace. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I know that we have to legally respond to the census, and I know that the Supreme Court is debating the citizenship question. So my question is, if they put the citizenship question on the census, are people responsible, like are they legally responsible to answer that particular question, or can they just leave it blank if they don't want to disclose?
Wow, Candace, it's a great question. And Emily on Facebook says, I won't answer the citizenship question. I'll fill out the rest, but not that one. I'm a second generation American. Steve from Swansea has a similar question. Would the Fifth Amendment protect people not answering the citizenship question? And Mark on Facebook says, I will not answer that question, so I guess I won't be counted. I wonder if they will take away my status as a veteran. Wow, Hanzi, lots of people not wanting to answer that question. Is it, are they going to get in legal trouble if they don't fill that box out?
Technically speaking, it is against federal law to not answer any of the questions on the census questionnaire and to answer falsely, intentionally. Then you could be fined, although those fines have been rarely enforced in the past. What's likely to happen if you were to skip any question, whether it be the citizenship question, if it were to be included, or another question, but you mail back or send online or call in essentially an incomplete census form, what might happen is you might get follow-up. You might get follow-up mailings, follow-up phone call, or a visit from the Census Bureau workers. However, the Census Bureau officials say that, you know, one thing to keep in mind is that if there are a lot of people who do that, the resources might not be available to the Census Bureau in order to do all the follow-up to everyone who sends in an incomplete census. So that's something to keep in mind, that if you were to skip a question, you might risk a follow-up, but the chances, the Census Bureau says, might be low.
So, and let's remind people, Hansi, this is an if. This question of citizenship is now before the U.S. Supreme Court.
That's right. This is a question that asks, is this person a citizen of the United States? It's asking for U.S. citizenship status. It's not asking for a person's immigration status. You have multiple options to check from to answer this question. Basically, yes, born in the United States, or yes, born in one of the territories, including Puerto Rico, born of U.S. Citizen parents, or yes, naturalized, and you print your year of naturalization, or you say no, not a U.S. citizen. This is a question. The wording appears currently, as we mentioned earlier, on the American Community Survey, which, by the way, you are required by law to answer as well, and you do risk getting follow-up visits and phone calls from Census Bureau workers if you do not answer an American Community Survey. Going back to the citizenship question the Trump administration wants to add, this is in the middle of a very, very long and complicated legal battle that I've been tracking for more than a year now, and currently it is blocked from being added to the 2020 census forms, but we are waiting to see what the Supreme Court is likely to rule by the end of this month. It's been blocked on two grounds. One, that it was let's talk about how it was added by Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, who oversees the Census Bureau. And he approved adding this question. And three federal judges have found that by him adding this question, he violated his discretion over the census, because one judge in New York, here in New York, has said that a smorgasbord of violations were made. There are lots of different rules and regulations about how changes are supposed to be made to the census when new questions are supposed to be added. And one of the main ones is that whenever new information is, government wants to collect new information, one thing the federal government has to keep in mind is that if there's a way to collect that information without adding a question to the census form, it should go with that route. And that alternative way, using existing government records on citizenship, was indeed the Census Bureau's recommendation to Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross. The Census Bureau researchers said adding a citizenship question would produce less accurate and more expensive data than collecting and compiling existing government records on citizenship.
Why would adding a citizenship question make the census less accurate, Hansi?
The concern here is that it is a very sensitive topic to ask about a person's citizenship status for some parts of the U.S. population. And this is at a time where there's increased immigration enforcement and also growing anti-immigrant rhetoric. This current climate, the Census Bureau has found, makes this a particularly sensitive question and would discourage people from participating in the census.
Well, coming up, we'll fold in two more voices on that topic, a couple more questions for you, Hansi, on this citizenship question. And we'll keep taking your comments, questions, concerns. Join us at 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
Recently on The Exchange, transgender panelists answer a listener's question about how to talk about those times before their child transitioned.
Just because they've come out as trans does not lessen that experience. Do you still own those memories? And I would say to any parent, those memories are yours, of your child. It's just being thoughtful both to what you need as a parent and understanding that your first priority is to make sure that your child is loved.
The Exchange is your place for New Hampshire conversations. weekday mornings at 9, only on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, housing nonprofits and the role they play in the state's affordable housing shortage. Join us for that tomorrow morning, live at 9 on The Exchange. This hour, preparing for the U.S. Census here in New Hampshire. Let's get your thoughts, comments, questions about how the census may be rolling out here in the Granite State. You can join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests for the hour are Ken Gallagher. He's principal planner at the state's Office of Strategic Initiatives. He's the Census Bureau's primary point of contact to New Hampshire state government. Joining us from New York City, Hansi Lo Wong, NPR correspondent. He's been covering the 2020 census. And Hansi, just before the break, you were describing the concern expressed by past Census Bureau officials, statisticians, and so forth, that if you add this citizenship question, your count might not be as accurate. I think you just reported this morning on a new study that says if this citizenship question is included, we might have the worst undercount of minorities in years. Give us a little more there, Hansi, please.
You know, these are new projections from the Urban Institute. They're a nonpartisan think tank based in Washington, D.C., and they came up with these projections based on how the plan the Census Bureau is preparing to carry out of how to do the count, as well as various bits of research Census Bureau researchers have done to kind of try to get an understanding of how a citizenship question could affect how people respond to the census. And the Urban Institute's researchers have projected that more than 4 million people could be left out of the 2020 census. Count if a citizenship question were to be added, or even if it were to be removed, just assuming that there is already a chilling factor that the talk about the citizenship question has made, especially amongst Latinx and immigrant communities. And specifically, you know, this kind of undercount could really hurt the population and the data specifically for Black and Latinx people, and could be as worse as the undercount back in 1990, which was a particularly a count where there was no advertising campaign to encourage people to participate, and it had significantly higher undercounts compared to 2000 and 2010.
Well, we talked to a local activist about this issue, concerned that there will be an undercount if this citizenship question is approved by the U.S. Supreme Court. We talked with Eva Castillo, program director with the New Hampshire Alliance for Immigrants and Refugees. And Eva told us in the last census, she worked to get the word out with immigrant communities, encouraging them to fill out the census. She says they were already nervous about it last time around. This year, she says she's worried it could be worse.
So now if they add up the citizenship question, plus all the anti-immigrant stuff that we hear all over the place, people are going to be even more reluctant to answer the census, and that's going to end up affecting our state. For the most part, people that come here come from governments that are really corrupt and bad, and I include myself. We do not trust the government in our country, and we carry all those ideas with us, and this presidency has not been immigrant-friendly to begin with. So it exacerbates that lack of trust.
We also talked to somebody who feels that the citizenship question is important. We reached out to Hans von Spekowski. He's a manager of election law reform at the Heritage Foundation in D.C. He served on the Presidential Advisory Commission on election security. And he told us he does not buy this argument that putting the citizenship question on the census form will cause a lot of people not to respond. He notes here that the Bureau's American Community Survey, which we already talked about, does ask about citizenship.
The data that the Census Bureau has about the non-response rate from the citizenship question on the American Community Survey isn't really any different than the non-response rate to, for example, when people are asked about their educational achievement level or things like that. Plus, the Census Bureau is extremely persistent in going after people who don't respond to the census or don't answer questions. They have literally millions of temporary workers whose only job it is to go out there and go after the very small percentage of people who don't respond to the census.
Again, that's Han von Spekowski with the Heritage Foundation in D.C. We heard a moment ago from Ava Castillo with the New Hampshire Alliance for Immigrants and Refugees. Another argument, Hansi, that came up in favor of the citizenship question is France, Canada, Germany, Australia, they all have citizenship questions on their censuses. I hope I'm doing the plural correctly there, Hansi. So what about that? How much analysis of that fact have you heard?
Certainly that there are, yes, that is the case. But I think the thing to keep in mind here is that a few things. Number one, the census in the United States is used for divvying up political power. And it is supposed to be a count of every person living in the country. And it determines how many congressional seats, electoral college votes each state gets, determines how we draw voting districts. This is data that has major implications on how power is shared in the country. And the concern here is that any question or any change to a census form that could jeopardize the accuracy of the count could risk creating an unfair situation for the next 10 years where every person would not be fairly represented, every person living in the country would not be fairly represented. That's one concern that has been brought up. The other point to keep in mind here is that if the Trump administration does indeed want more detailed citizenship data to better enforce the Voting Rights Act, as that is the reason the census, the Trump administration has said that it wants to better enforce part of the Voting Rights Act, protections against discrimination of racial and language minorities. Currently, those protections are being enforced by using American Community Survey citizenship data. The census, the Trump administration says it wants more detailed data than the American Community Survey, and that's why it wants to add the citizenship question to the 2020 census. But again, the Census Bureau researchers have found that you're not going to get the most accurate information, and you're going to get more expensive information. Essentially, you're going to make a bad choice here if you were to rely on self-reported data from a citizenship question on the 2020 census. So two things here. You get bad data, and also you risk tainting the well of all the information that is so critical to political representation, to distribution of federal funds, as well as setting up the basic reality of who is living in the country over the next 10 years.
Got a couple emails on this question. Marilyn says, respectfully, the question should move forward. Marilyn says it has nothing to do with racial perspective. It has to do with legal immigration, obeying the laws of the land. If a person, Marilyn says, immigrant has a lack of trust, it has to do with legality of immigration. So that's from Marilyn. Thank you, Marilyn. Greg in Portsmouth says, as many genealogists know, censuses of 100 and more years ago had questions of land, of birth and citizenship and maternal language. Greg says, my Hungarian great-grandmother who arrived in the U.S. around 1870 never took U.S. citizenship and always listed Austria as her country of birth. She still clung to the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Wow, Greg. And her maternal tongue as, I'm going to mess this up, Greg, sorry, Magyar or Hungarian. So, Hansi, you know, there is a sense among these listeners, Marilyn and Greg, that we've asked it before. Other countries ask it. Why not? What's the problem?
You know, well, the citizenship question was a citizenship question. A question about citizenship status was included in past census forms. The last time it was included among the questions for every household was back in 1950, almost 70 years ago. One of the reasons why it was recently revealed as part of the research from historian Margot Anderson, who's the top historian over census history, she found out that after 1960, Census Bureau researchers looked at this and realized that asking a citizenship question or asking about citizenship on the census would actually produce maybe not as accurate data as collecting information from the citizenship agency at that time.
Thank you for those emails. And here's one from Stacia in Thornton who wants to ask about overcounting and undercounting. So I'll pull you into this as well, Ken. Stacia says, how does the state get census information from homeless people? And then she says, how does New Hampshire account for people who live in the state part-time, winter and summer homes? Two really important questions. First of all, to you, Ken, how does the state get census information from homeless people?
Right. That's well, first, of course, it's going to be the census workers getting it. There are homeless people can be, too, you know, they can be living in camps or they might just have not have a home and be living in, you know, staying temporarily somewhere
else.
Couch
surfing,
exactly.
People call it, yeah.
So part of the information that we need to get out is that if somebody is staying with you, You need to count them if they're staying there, if they don't have anywhere else to go. If they're there on April 1st with you, we want those people to be counted where they're staying at that time.
How do you avoid overcounting in that situation, Ken? Because, again, we've done tons of shows on homelessness, and people do say, hey, for 2 years I was couch surfing. So let's say someone stays with, you know, me for a week and you for a week. How do we avoid them being counted twice?
Right. Well, we try to explain that in the guidance that they have. They're really looking for April 1st. So if people are moving around a lot, it's April 1st. Where
I
are you
see.
On April
Who
1st?
Who was living with you on April 1st?
And I know the census also has, I don't know the internal workings of their quality control procedures, but I think they do also have some various tools that they use to sort of indicate whether people are being listed twice, for instance. We do put down names of people, for instance, when we list them on the form. So I think there are various protocols that they can do for that. As for homeless other people living in camps, I know, again, I'm not personally familiar with this, but I do know that there are operations where volunteers will go out to known camps all on the same night and count as many people as they can.
Interesting. Yeah. So the survey has to do with who was living in your house on this one particular day.
April 1st.
Not who was
day.
There last week, not who's going to be there next month.
Correct.
So that raises another question for me, Ken. I've got a college student in my house. So do I count him? April 1st, he's still away at school.
College students are, this is an important thing. I think a lot of people don't realize this. College students are adults, and they're living, you count people where they live the majority of the year. If they're an adult, if they're away at college, they get counted where they are in college because that's where they're living. So if you have a child who is away at college and comes back later, they need to put down that they get to fill out where they are on campus if they are there on for the majority of that particular year.
Okay, in this instance, he's out of the country, so I'm not
and
sure.
If he's out of the country, he won't get counted, actually, as a college student. There are, actually, we do count armed services members overseas and I think certain federal workers, but if you're a college student and you're spending a year abroad and it happens to be 2020, then guess what? You're not.
You're going to miss a lot of people then. Hansi, I'd love your thoughts on this, too. I mean, I understand what Ken says. There are special efforts to count veterans serving abroad, U.S. diplomats serving abroad. But there are a lot of people who study abroad, one of my sons included. Also, there are lots of people who work for big multinationals who may be stationed. I've got a friend whose brother is stationed in Dubai right now. So how do those people get counted, if at all, Hansi?
Right. This is a very, gets at the very complicated question that the Census Bureau has to determine. How do you determine who is considered living in the country on Census Day? And especially when there are folks who consider themselves residents of the United States, but they happen to just not be living or working for a majority of the year during a census year. And so there's a very extensive kind of a FAQs, if you will, of all the kind of residence criteria is what the Census Bureau calls it. And they do make those calls and how to determine who gets included and who does not. And folks who are living overseas for the majority of the year and not part of the armed services or not part of the federal government, they are excluded from the apportionment count.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, Ken, that those folks might tend to skew younger. So that's going to make the data look like we're a little older than we really are, maybe.
Well, but on the other hand, that may well be the case for New Hampshire. Certainly, there aren't as many. I think more people go out to college than come into college. That's probably what we know. I wanted to get back to, I think your caller had a question about multiple.
Yes, Stacia, her question about what about people who live in the state part-time? A huge second home market here in New Hampshire. I love that she asked that question.
Well, the thing to be aware of is that the census mails out forms by address, not by person. So if you have two addresses, you will get a form at each place. If you're down in Florida in March, you might be getting a form down there. If you live most of the year in New Hampshire, though, and again, please follow the instructions, then you will be putting down that you live in New Hampshire. And again, these protocols that they have in the census, they'll be able to catch if you, for some reason, decided to fill out the form twice, if you were down in Florida and then moved back to New Hampshire.
And when you say form sent to you, Ken, do you mean a physical paper form or online?
I meant the mailer that you get, whether it's online or whether they're going to send you the paper form.
Okay, and will we get both, paper and electronic?
You know, actually, I was just talking with the census about this, and of course, it's now slipped my mind how that works. Everybody gets the mailer saying you can fill out the form electronically, and that comes out in March. There are certain areas where some people will be getting the form anyway, no matter what they do, and this is based on how they think people are going to respond.
Let's take another call, gentlemen, and this is Chris in Grantham. Hi, Chris, you're on the air. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, good morning.
Morning. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm a 25-year veteran of the U.S. military and resident of the Upper Valley, and I personally am going to boycott the question concerning citizenship in 2020 if it does make it through the Supreme Court as an affirmative, and I would like to enjoin all fellow Granite Staters to do the same. I just think it's the question is has been put on the census for nefarious purposes, and I think we as Granite Staters just need to have a referendum on exactly what we think about that. So.
Well,
that's kind of my comment there.
Well, Chris, and thank you for your military service, and I'm glad you called. I read an email earlier, Chris, from another Granite Stater, Marilyn, who said, hey, this isn't about race, this isn't about politics, it's about legal and illegal. So I just wonder what you think about that, Chris.
Concerning the last 2 years of this administration, I cannot see that this is a coincidence. This is a continued trend of, disrespecting the immigrants that have made this country great. And I just think that, personally, from my standpoint, my civic duty is to not answer that question.
Okay.
Because I just think it was put on the census for nefarious purposes.
Chris, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate it. And Hansi, this gets to some reporting that you've done on the gentleman, sort of the, I don't want to call them the father of gerrymandering because that's not right, but someone who did encourage the administration, the Republican Party, to put this question on in order to gain advantage to Republicans, a gentleman whose name I believe was Hoffeller.
Hoffler, correct.
That leads to the suspicion that our caller has. That's where that stems from.
Right. He was a major GOP redistricting strategist, and this is what I'll be in court on Wednesday for, to hear a hearing to see exactly what a judge finds, that if the plaintiffs have brought enough evidence to show that he played a significant role in shaping the Trump administration's request for this question.
Interesting. And speaking of courts, just remind us, Hansi, the U.S. Supreme Court is going to decide on this very soon, right?
We're expecting by the end of the month, but it's the Supreme Court. They have a lot of discretion, so we will wait and see.
All right. Thank you both very much for being here. Hansi Lo Wang, it was really great to have you. Thank you.
You are welcome.
That's Hansi Lo Wang, NPR national correspondent. He's been very busy covering the 2020 census. Ken Gallagher, it was really nice to meet you. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you.
That's Ken Gallagher, again, principal planner at the state's Office of Strategic Initiatives. And this is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.